Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Zivi Owens, and I am the host of this podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I am also a newly minted USA Today bestselling author of the novel Blank. I've created a whole community of book lovers around this podcast, a publishing company, reading retreats, a bookstore, and more. Learn more at zivimedia.com or follow me on social at Zivi Owens or join the community at Zivi Readers. Admiral James Stavridis and Elliot Ackerman are co-authors of 2054, a novel. Elliot Ackerman is the author of the novels Halcyon, Red Dress in Black and White, Waiting for Eden, and we talked about both of those books on my podcast the last time he was on, Dark at the Crossing, and Green on Blue, and the memoirs The Fifth Act and Places and Names. His books have been nominated for numerous awards that include the National Book Award, the Andrew Carnegie Medal in Fiction and Nonfiction, and the Dayton Literary Peace Prize. He is a contributing writer at The Atlantic and a Marine veteran, having served 5 tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, where he received the Silver Star, the Bronze Star for Valor, and the Purple Heart. I can't believe next to his Purple Heart mention in his bio, he doesn't also mention that he was a contributor to Moms Don't Have Time to a Quarantine Anthology, and yet he was. Admiral James Stavridis, USN, retired, spent more than 30 years in the U.S. Navy, rising to the rank of 4-star admiral. He was Supreme Allied Commander at NATO and previously commanded U.S. Southern Command, overseeing military operations through Latin America. At sea, he commanded a Navy destroyer, a destroyer squadron, and an aircraft carrier battle group in combat. He holds a PhD from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University, where he recently served 5 years as dean. He received 50 medals in the course of his military career, including 28 from foreign nations. He has published 12 other books and is chief international analyst for NBC News and a Bloomberg Opinion weekly columnist. He is currently partner and vice chair, global affairs of the Carlyle Group and the chair of the board of the Rockefeller Foundation. He was a little late joining the Zoom because he was live on NBC, but I forgave him. Welcome to Elliot and Admiral James Stavridis. Thank you both for coming. I already read your introduction, so we can just jump right in. Congratulations, 2054. So amazing. This kept me up. All the fast-paced, shorty. I was talking to my kids about it. And they're like, I've barely gotten into it. And they're like, but you're like on page 50. And I was like, I know, but it still like feels like the beginning and I have so much more. Anyway, congratulations. Tell listeners what this book is about and how it follows up your previous book and all the rest.
Well, I'll start with kind of how it follows up. And then Elliot is the master storyteller who can give a little précis of the novel itself. The way it came about, Zivi, was we started with a previous book, 2034, which is about a war with China set in the year 2034. And then as we looked at the way the century is unspooling, we saw that coming challenges include artificial intelligence and the potential of civil conflict in America. And you don't, by the way, have to have read 2034 to pick up 2054, but it kind of carries on with some of the characters and takes us to mid-century, the year 2054. And it's intended, and I'll close with this and pitch it to Elliot, but it's intended as a cautionary tale, not as predictive fiction, but as a warning bell. Read this, think about it. We have to control artificial intelligence, and we must avoid civil conflict in America. That's the mission of the book. Elliot?
In terms of this story, it really opens up by projecting out trends that we're already seeing in American life. So it is told in the 2034 universe, and the opening of that universe is a war between the US and China. So now we're 20 years out from that war. And America is led by its first independent president, who gets himself elected to office because, and this is a trend that is already occurring today, more and more Americans aren't identifying as Republicans and Democrats, and the parties are just bleeding membership. And so as they bleed membership, it creates this opportunity for him to run as an independent. And in the wake of this war, he's a pretty effective president, but as is often the case, people don't like to let go of power. And his name is President Angel Castro. And he often quips that if, you know, this country could elect a president with the middle name Hussein, it can certainly elect a president with the last name Castro. But he doesn't want to leave Washington. And there's much controversy about the fact that he's an effective president. But should he be allowed to stay in office? And is the United States starting to look like a one-party country? And at that moment, Castro is giving a speech, and he suspiciously keels over dead. And this is in the first, you know, 50 pages of the book. And the circumstances around his death are very, very mysterious. And what occurs are a number of competing narratives as to how he died, who may have killed him, or what might have killed him. And it's the what that gets into really the second theme of the novel. In addition to being a book that is about civil conflict in the United States, it's also a book about artificial intelligence and how artificial intelligence not only affects us technologically, but affects our consciousness. And it builds to this idea of what many people have written about, which is called the singularity. In our book, the singularity is really the moment where we start to see biological evolution merging with technological evolution, and this idea that in the future, perhaps really the new microchips will be molecules and will begin altering ourselves. So that's sort of the entry point of the book. And as Jim mentioned, you see, you know, some of the characters have come forward, many of the themes in 2054 are there. And I think it's a pretty fun read, and it's designed to be a, you know, a thriller and a page turner.
Wow. Well, you take us inside the autopsy room where we see the surprise on the face of the doctors holding up the president's heart and saying, like, this cannot be the same heart that he had just, you know, performed a test on. And what on earth could have could have made this collection of cells? And that takes you down this whole sort of rabbit hole. In fact, it was quite graphic, like the scraping down the thing and, you know, opening up the chest. And I'm okay.
Well, I have to tell you, neither Elliot and I are doctors, but I have two son-in-laws who are physicians who helped me with that particular scene and helped us build that realism. And it's I think quite good. It grabs the reader. Let's put it that way.
It really does. Well, tell them they did a really good job on the details there. Definitely catches your attention. But the idea that our bodies can be infiltrated in some way, even with your heads up, right? That's what it's called, the implantable chips that everybody can wear, which are reminiscent of that game. Do you know the game Heads Up the kids play? Well,
yeah, okay. I do.
Yeah, that's sort of my heads up. But anyway, the advantages and disadvantages of embeddable technology, if you will. Talk a little bit about that and where you see it going, and how can we prevent some of these scary things from happening?
I'll start by saying it is scary, and the point of the book, a major point, is to be prepared for that. But we ought to immediately acknowledge, and you'll find this in the book as well, that it could be and probably will be an enormous force for good as well. So It's like the advent of electricity or the printing press. These big muscle movements in terms of technologies come with both dangers. You can picture what people thought when the first printing press arrived, and suddenly knowledge could go everywhere. or how's electricity going to be used in war to power missiles and aircraft? So there are always going to be good and dangerous things about any technology. And I think we pretty much explore both sides of it in the novel. And I think that's an important component to it.
And I mean, I would just add, you know, one of the things the novel addresses too is how we start to think about technology differently in the future. And that, you know, we've all just come off a moment where just about every American injected themselves with a piece of technology because it was a vaccine that was artificially created. And so there's this idea, I think when we think of technology now, you know, we think of EVs and it's something that's made out of metal or glass, but increasingly that technology will start to look differently. I mean, there's a moment in the book where one of the characters sort of is musing on this idea and he asks himself, you know, will robots inherit the earth? And the conclusion he comes to is yes, but they will be our children. And that this will be a process by which, again, the technological and the biological start merging and the barrier between the two becomes increasingly porous. And, you know, and we see that in the opening of the book, the way the president is assassinated isn't with a bullet or a knife, it's with a piece of biological technology.
Yeah, I'll just add two of my favorite authors are Ian McEwan, both British, by the way, Ian McEwan and Ishiguro, a Nobel laureate, the latter. His latest book, Clara and the Sun, mm-hmm. kind of interrogates some of these issues. And Ian McEwan's book is very much in this vein, a book, Machines Like Us, to picking up Eliot's point of the biological and the technological drawing closer and closer.
Well, it's pretty frightening, I think. I mean, just the idea of your own kids or grandkids becoming something very other and not understandable and not even of the same cut from the same cloth, if you will. I mean, then the whole society and the effects of that.
However, they could then live indefinitely. You know, the dream of mankind forever has been immortality. And that comes with its pros and its cons as well. So I think these are the big issues of our time. And it was very fun to explore them in fiction.
How did the two of you write this together? Did you sit and brainstorm, like, what if, what would the world be like? And then you went to the writing. How did it happen?
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Sometimes we all have stuff we need to get off our chests. Even if we don't think it's interfering with our daily life, there are some things you just haven't processed, be it grief or trauma, eating disorders, anything. It might be time to work on those things, and I have a solution for you. Therapy. Online therapy by BetterHelp. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. I took the brief questionnaire online where there were, 20 questions. It didn't take long at all, maybe 3 minutes. And then I got matched with a therapist who could help me work on whatever. I picked trauma because even though it happened in 2001, I am somehow still not over the loss of my friend on 9/11. And it is what it is. BetterHelp is going to help, and I am so excited, especially because with my special code, instead of $80 a month, it is 10% off, $72 a month, which is so much less than traditional therapy, and you'll get a perfect therapist for you. There are 35,000 therapists to choose from, so you'll find the right one. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/momsdonthavetime today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P
www.mom.com/momsdonthavetime.
Sure. Well, I mean, we've sort of done, and again, this is part of a series, and the last in the series that will come up will be 2084, which is to deal with climate, which we are already very much, you know, in the process of writing. But, you know, when we first started collaborating on these projects, we, you know, we had a pre-existing friendship, and our mutual book editor suggested that the two of us work with one another. And so we sat down and said, okay, well, you know, how's this going to work? And let's try to write a first chapter together and see how that goes. And that was a big success. We've sort of done every book the same way. We write them chapter by chapter. We sit down, we outline what we think is going to happen. We do that sort of with a great deal of detail. Typically, I'm the one, once we kind of feel like we've got it all planned out, I'll go take a first crack at it. And then I'll hand my mind to Jim. He'll toy with it. We'll kind of bat it back and forth until we both think it's in pretty good shape. And then we go to the next chapter. And so we've been doing that for a while now, and it seems to work for us.
We also have a absolutely terrific editor who is very positive when he feels strongly that we're on the right track. But he is very quick to say, nope, you guys have really run off the rails here. Here's what I think you should do. And then we'll kind of get back and forth, and we'll be the ones saying, hey, this is the best damn novel ever. And he'll be saying, well, you know, maybe we could adjust. So I think there's a third person in this relation, this writing relationship. Scott Moyers is his name at Penguin Press Random House. He's a brilliant, brilliant editor.
Well, when you were thinking about the party system, which I also found interesting, and how there are the Democrat Republicans or the Republican Democrats, and how there's like the truth group,
truthers, yeah.
Truthers, and these new parties, how did you come up with them? And do you see this happening? Like, I know you were just saying bleeding into one another and the rise of the independents, but could there be this, when would that happen and how soon? And just where do you see all of this really going?
I'll start on that one just by saying, you know, people act like somewhere in the Constitution, it says there shall be two political parties, Republicans and Democrats. That's not in the Constitution. We didn't start with either Republicans or Democrats. We started with Whigs, nationalists, Republican Democrats, the Star Party, nationalists, progressives, the Bull Moose Party. We've had a lot of political parties in this country. And I think, to Elliot's point earlier, people are increasingly dissatisfied with the way the extremes in both of those parties have co-opted them. And there's a huge tranche of us who are kind of in the middle who are thinking, I have two daughters in their 30s. They're both married, as I mentioned, to physicians. All four of them look right. They look left. And they say, where's my party? Mm. So yeah, I think this could happen fairly soon. But by 2054, I'll be surprised if it hasn't happened.
Ooh, maybe I'll start the book party.
I think you already did, Zibby.
People can connect over that, right? Do you wake up and feel just hopeless and depressed looking at the news ever? I mean, how do you get through? It feels like sometimes that things feel very hopeless in a way, right? That, how are we ever going to unite as a country again? And like, where is all of that patriotism? And just, I feel like, you know, It's not the most optimistic looking time in this election and blah, blah, blah. So I don't know. How do you two feel about it?
I agree. And I can certainly sympathize with feeling that way. You know, I think as much as these books are obviously forward looking, you know, one of the things that was fun about 2054 is this book, you know, kind of becomes more science fiction than our previous book, because it has to be. But there are also all of these books that have been kind of deeply rooted in history. And so much as then when we think about, you know, the challenges laid out in this book, I mean, political assassination, division between the parties, civil war, potentially, they're all places where we've been before. And they're all points in our own history where we've managed to innovate our way out of them and come together. So yes, I certainly feel pessimistic and frustrated when I watch the news. By the way, I find a great tonic to that is not watching too much cable, particularly cable news. But all that being said, I think when you pause and you reflect on the trajectory of our country over many, many years, you actually see that we've done pretty well. And I think as Americans, oftentimes, particularly, we have a tendency to think of ourselves as a young people, and we are as a civilization. We are a young civilization. For instance, like the Chinese don't even consider a society a civilization until it's 300 years old. So we're not even there yet in terms of the Chinese. But what we are is actually a very old form of government. I mean, there are very few democracies you can point at in the world that have existed for around 250 years, not France, not Germany, you know, maybe the Brits. And so that, like the enduring system of our government, is what makes me optimistic. But yeah, I mean, these are certainly challenging times, and I think it's going to be a challenging year.
I think I see the bumper sticker for the book party. The book party, don't watch cable news, read a book. And I'm optimistic by nature. Most Greek Americans are. It's kind of baked into our culture. And, you know, like Elliot and I have both seen our share of combat over the years. We've seen really bad things. Yeah, we've got problems in this country, but I'm cautiously optimistic, just as Elliot said a moment ago. We'll work our way through these things, and there'll be speed bumps and challenges. And again, our mission with this book is to foreshadow what some of those speed bumps could be, because if you see them coming, you can prepare for them and reverse engineer it and end up in a far better place.
What's the one thing we should really be focused on right now?
As a society, I think it's the divisions in our country. So we can talk about all the challenges in the Middle East. We can talk about Russia, Ukraine war, US, China, artificial intelligence, cybersecurity, is another pandemic coming. My view, we can handle all those things. What I worry about the most are these divisions in the country. We have got to find leaders who are willing to bring us together. That's how we find a path out of this dark forest we've wandered into.
So how far into 2084 are you? How's that going?
We're pretty far. We're pretty far. Yeah, we're just about at the first draft mark. You know, and that's a book that, again, it's going to be, our first book was very much naval in nature because we are both two naval officers. But, you know, it's a book that deals with climate, what the world looks like if you take some of the challenges we're facing today in climate and project them outwards, and the idea of geopolitics when certain nations are demanding climate reparations and their countries become entirely inhabitable, and how that will affect migratory patterns, international politics, and domestic politics. And it also, in terms of the technology, takes some of the strands that you see in 2054 and keeps projecting them out there. It is also, like our other books, has a very heavy technological component to it. So we're pretty far along.
Yeah, and I'll just add, this is partly why we wanted to write these as novels. You could certainly write a nonfiction book about the dangers of climate and the potential outcomes, where you could write a nonfiction book about a war with China or artificial intelligence, its dangers and its benefits. But with fiction, you get to put characters into it. And I think readers are pulled through books ultimately by characters. Even nonfiction, you tend to be pulled through by whoever the nonfiction cast is. Look at the movie Oppenheimer, which is brilliant. It's based on a terrific book by Kai Bird, American Prometheus. It reads like a novel. Walter Isaacson's biographies read like novels. You're pulled by characters. Mm-hmm. And so in all three of these books, it's certainly the technology, but it's also the, I think, very interesting, vulnerable characters who carry this story, suffer its consequences, solve its problems. That's what makes writing fiction so much fun. And we've both written both nonfiction and fiction, and they're both great forms. But for our purposes in this trilogy, fiction really was a big canvas that we could splash a lot of paint on.
Is the trilogy going to have a home on the screen?
We're looking for one. I think they make some fun movies.
I think so too.
I think all three of them could be incredibly good films. And we encountered some interest on 2034 that's still kind of bubbling. And I think 54 will be an easier sell for a number of different reasons. And so I'm kind of hopeful we could see 2054 in particular catch some interest out in Hollywood.
Well, it definitely reads like a movie. You feel like you're seeing the whole thing, and that's such a wonderful type of writing where it's so immersive that you feel like you've already watched it, like you can see the whole thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, congratulations to both of you. Can't wait for the next one. And wow, modern day trilogy of, this is like how smart men deal with anxiety. It's like,
well, the other thing we do is we also like the idea of service dogs. And I see that your puppy just wandered in there. Is that a chocolate lab back there?
It's a black lab.
Black lab. Yeah. And what is what is his or her name?
Her name is Naya.
Yeah. Okay.
She was my late mother-in-law's dog. So we adopted her a couple of years ago.
We have a beautiful basset hound named Penelope. And there's a literary reason for her name, Penelope. She's named after the wife of Ulysses, who waited patiently for her sailor to come home from the sea in the Odyssey. So Penelope is my faithful, waited for me the whole way, just like my beautiful wife, Laura. Anyway, thanks for taking time to be with us today. It was really fun.
Oh, thanks for coming on. Okay. Appreciate
bye,
it.
Bye, Zimmy.
Good to see you.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening to Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you love it, please leave a review and follow us on social at Zibby Owens and at Zibby Readers.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.